Blog Talk Radio.
Can't reach the publicist.
For him?
Yep.
Try the other one.
Yes, is this Rachel? Rachel, hi, this is Stuart. I'm the engineer for Adrian Berg's radio show. Okay, good. So our first guest had an emergency and is not able to make it. Can you come on early and stay for the hour? Oh, sure, we will. Definitely have that much of chat. And, you know, Adrian has her own thing that she does during the show, too. So could you call into that number right now and we'll get going? Great. Great, great. Thanks, Rachel. We'll look for you right now. Thank you. Okay, she's calling in now. Calling you now, Yeah, she is. She's on the second page. I'll have to get it up there for you. She's on now.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks for calling in. I'm putting you on hold, and Adrian will be with you in a few minutes just to do a little prep, and we'll get going. We'll do four segments. It'll be 11 minutes, 9 minutes, 11 minutes, 8 minutes, okay?
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you. Hang on for Adrian.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Dr. Wu?
Yeah, is this Adrian?
Yes, it is. Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. I wanted to thank you first for taking the extra half hour. That's really nice. But I have to tell you that I think I wished it, because I really wanted to do a whole hour with you when I saw what it was about. And let me tell you why. I'm writing actually something about play. It's called Environments for Play in Everyday Adult Life. And a lot of it actually has to do with cognition and the ability to learn. So it's perfect. I just really wanted to basically pick your brain on the air. That's my plan,
sure,
okay?
Yeah. No problem.
The other thing is there anything you want me to tell the audience where to find anything? Is there a website for you?
So my research lab is live at calalab.com.
Right. And will it be for laymen? I mean, will the average person get some?
So there's kind of a mix for both. And so explanations are all, you know, for non-academics.
Right.
But when you click links, all of the research papers are available. And so far, all of the research papers and non-academic papers are kind of mixed in, so I need to somehow piece them apart. But you can look for, like, it's clearly, labeled what's a research paper and what's not. So,
okay.
Yeah, so they can kind of go on it and just, you know, if they see something with, like, a ton of text and a lot of jargon, then it's a research paper. And if it's, like, the Scientific American article, it'll be a non-academic paper, so.
Okay, good. So I'll ask you at a couple of different points to give your website, okay?
Sure, yeah.
Now, what we're going to get into, now I have something from your PR people, and it ends with the 6 characteristics.
Right,
in other words, but it doesn't tell me what they are, and we're going to be talking about that. In other words, we're first going to lead up to what this is about, right?
Right.
And
right.
Then we'll go a little deeper into what are those 6 characteristics that can
right.
be applied to adult learning. Is that all right?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if you can talk about this or if it's your thing. I talk a lot about fluid intelligence versus crystallized intelligence.
Right.
And is that something that we can discuss from your point of view?
Yeah, we can totally discuss that, yeah.
Okay. Does it relate to the ability to learn or the 6 steps?
Yeah, I mean, the whole point is how you can increase fluid and crystallized intelligence, right? And so we're working on a theory, an extension to the original theory, to try to figure out how you can actually increase these things.
Okay.
And so the 6 things are supposed to be helping you increase these, you know.
Okay, good. Good.
Yeah.
So I'm ready for this, and you'll hear my introductions. They're very clear. You're going to hear music. I'm going to introduce the show. I'll introduce you. Then I'm going to start to talk to you about the focus of this, all right? Then
okay,
I'm going
great.
To
Thanks.
Ask you to talk about those 2 elements, and then we'll get into the 6 things that people could do, all right?
Okay.
And we'll also, of course, we're definitely going to talk about ageism and the idea
right.
that we can't learn, right? And we're going to talk about the importance of learning and it's part of successful aging, all right?
Right.
Then
okay,
now
great,
this is... The only trick is, at the end, you're going to hear music again. If you do, be quiet. I'm going to try to stop it be the one to get into the music and not you. All right,
yeah.
Stuart, we are ready.
Okay, great.
All right, 10 seconds of silence, and then you'll hear the music.
Okay.
Yep, we're ready. I was just told to say it's more than 10 seconds, but don't worry. I am now told it is 40 seconds for real. I know, it's a zoo, but okay.
In the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And that is the truth about aging, because we are the bold generation. We are the baby boomers. We are the silence. We are the folks who make things happen. Now, can we continue to do so? Well, you bet you can. And today, we are going to focus on something that is one of the 7 most important elements of successful aging. and that is lifelong learning. Now, if you are listening to this show, then you're a successful ager, or at least interested in successful aging. And remember that aging starts around age 30, so don't think we have to be one foot in the grave in order to care about this stuff. We are aging all the time. And you are probably taking a course somewhere. Or you probably are doing your crossword puzzles or hanging your paintings upside down or something to jog your cognition because you don't want to lose it. But are we being realistic? Is it so that we could learn all of our lives? Or do we really have to decline? Well, today we have an incredible guest. It's Dr. Rachel Wu, and she has her PhD from the University of London. She has four other degrees, including a diploma in fine art from Middlesex University. She's an artist in her own right. She's recently been honored with the Rising Star Award from the Association of Psychological Science. So we got a heavy hitter here. In addition to that, she's been in a rock band, but we'll talk about that later. And she has a premise, and that is a premise that I love and I embrace. And that is, our brains do not necessarily have to work poorly as we age. We don't have to become less sharp. But we're going to unpack that. And we're going to show you some of the things that you can really do in your own personal real life to make sure you're ever a lifelong learner. So, Dr. Wu, thank you so much for being with us. And I just want to kick this off. Just explain to us the focus of your research and why you got into it in the first place.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me on, Adrienne. The main point of the theory is to better understand why we age and what we can do about it, right? And how much of aging is actually self-imposed or how much of it is actually something that we just really can't control. And so I actually studied a lot of infants when I was in grad school. I still study infants now, but when you look at infants, they learn very, very differently from how adults learn, right? And so part of the theory is to understand why infants learn also very differently. And so when I was looking at infants, I noticed six things that infants do and also have, and also children. And when you go later into the lifespan, into young adulthood and aging adulthood, these six things kind of disappear in a way. And so these six things are potentially something that we could have older adults do and have, you know, adults do in general. And maybe that could actually, you know, address some of the concerns that adults have in terms of cognitive decline.
Yeah, and, you know, I want to explain to everybody that this is fun. We call it learning, and we do have some of us still get a chill when we think of the idea of school or learning. But we are talking about fun, and I've been doing some research myself because we consult on environments for aging, on environments for play. And one of the things I want to bring you back to, Dr. Wu, is how kids do play, because what I've discovered just in doing my own research is that play is part of learning for kids. That
exactly.
It's parallel play, individual play, but it's part of the way that they actually learn about the universe. And so there's a big connection between play. And one of the problems with older folks is we forget to play. We don't play. So explain a little bit to us at least one or two of the big six, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the brain itself as we age. But give us one or two of the big six that we seem to
sure.
lose as we age and we could regain.
So the top two probably are, so number one, being completely outside of your comfort zone more often than not. So exploring new patterns, learning new skills. You know, how often have you been so uncomfortable where you were because you didn't know anything in the past, like, you know, year or 2 years or something like that? And so if you think about how often this happens for babies and kids, it's pretty often, you know, for babies at least, it's even hourly, you know, daily. And for kids, it's, you know, at least once a year because they have to change, you know, to a new grade every year. So the second one is when you are trying to learn something, how often do you have people helping you get to where you need to go? And how often are you learning something where you need people to help you get to where you need to go? So as adults, we're typically learning, basically teaching ourselves, right? Or maybe we can try to cobble something together if we can try to find a little bit of help here and there. But babies and kids get teachers 24/7, essentially. Babies, if they're trying to learn language, they get, you know, parents and caregivers who will be there and teach them whatever language they want to learn. So those are the top two probably that I would say.
Yeah, and, you know, this is life-changing. You may be listening to this and saying, well, you know, we have a PhD here. We have people who research on aging. And you know what? This can change lives. Let me give you two examples. We are so much on the same page. I'm speaking here with Dr. Rachel Wu. She's a PhD from the University of London with a lot of research on how we learn and the fact that we don't have to lose it. We can use it. A long time ago, Rachel, I did a paper called Killed in the Comfort Zone. And it was exactly what you were talking about, the idea that we can kill our future if we keep doing the same thing over and over again. You have no idea how much we lose in enthusiasm for life in our 70s and 80s, and particularly in our 80s, by the way. It's the most dangerous decade. I call it the dangerous decade because we do the same thing over and over, mostly out of fear. We don't want to challenge ourselves. We stay in the comfort zone, and therefore we can't learn. The other has to do with reverse mentoring. There's a group called Osher, and I want every one of you to write this down, O-S-H-E-R. That's a real guy, and he did a foundation for lifelong learning, Mr. Osher Foundation for Lifelong Learning. It's in 114 colleges all over the country. And the fact is that when I was doing a keynote for him, we talked about reverse mentoring, meaning young people mentoring older folks, like you're talking about, like kids get help. We've got to take help from younger people. We can't just say we can't understand the computer. We have to let our kids and our grandkids and our neighbors help us with this. So that's terrific. And I promised, though, I talk a little bit about something that fascinates me, and that is fluid intelligence and crystalline intelligence. See, Rachel, I got a mission here. I'm trying to make people believe that we can be even smarter when we get older. Could you explain those two functions, those two intelligent functions, and how they differ, and do we really have to decline when it comes to fluid and crystalline intelligence?
Right, so most people think that fluid and crystallized are two separate entities or modules, right? And so fluid intelligence typically refers to, the ability to engage in problem solving, reasoning, maybe even executive function, which is basically, you know, if you can switch between tasks, things that don't really require knowledge. And so crystallized intelligence is typically related to knowledge, right? Things that you've gained, you know, like dates for things, just vocabulary, things like that. And so it's not clear to me, though, how those two things actually interact, right? So if you think about across the lifespan, crystallized knowledge or crystallized intelligence is supposed to increase from infancy to, let's say, your latest level of education, right? And then it's supposed to just kind of maintain. It very rarely declines. If it does decline, it's only, you know, very, very slight. So you never really lose the knowledge that you've gained. But what really declines is your fluid abilities. And so you gain a lot in from infancy to young adulthood. And then from young adulthood and middle age, it's supposed to start declining. And then especially during older adulthood and after retirement, there's a pretty steep decline. So I've been thinking a lot more and more about this, and I still need to do, you know, scientific studies to back this up. But it may be something where as you're learning, you know, as you're gaining crystallized intelligence and actual knowledge, your fluid abilities also go up because you're engaging in these kinds of abilities that don't require knowledge, right? And so they kind of go hand in hand is my guess. So if you're not really increasing in crystallized knowledge, you might not be increasing in fluid either, which is making fluid decline dramatically.
Yeah, we're going to talk about things where this really makes a difference. Fluid intelligence, hand-eye coordination, being able to act quickly, being able to drive and make driving decisions on the spot,
right,
versus your experience, your crystallized intelligence, how much you've learned in school, but also how much you've learned from life, which actually does go up and as Dr. Wu was saying, stays steady. I got a theory on this one, and I'm going to hide it until we come back. We're going to talk about this, and then we're going to go through the other four items. of what you can do for lifelong learning. Don't go anywhere. We're going to make you very smart.
That doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy. And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
Okay, so we are off. They put in a commercial here, which we will not hear. Okay?
Great.
And Dr. Wilmore, when I come back, which will be very, very soon, we're going to introduce the website to everybody. Okay?
Great. Okay.
And then we'll talk about my theory, and then we'll go for a minute, and then we'll go back. I'll be very quick with that. And then we'll go to more of the big six. Okay?
Great. Yep.
To more of the big six.
Stu, we are ready when you are now.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
And hello, hello, hello once again. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. It is the only syndicated show. I mean, I can't believe that. Apparently it's true. That we have in this country that actually focuses on successful aging. I don't know why. We want to be a success in everything else. We'll do anything to keep our skin nice. We'll do absolutely anything to have those tight abs and a six-pack. And, of course, hopefully we concentrate on our money. But aging, boy, every one of us is doing this. And one of the things that we have been taught maybe is that there's nothing we can do about it. That it's just going to happen, it's going to be bad. Two things, it's going to happen, it's going to be bad. Well, today we have with us Dr. Rachel Wu. She's a PhD. She is studying lifelong learning, one of the most important things that we can do to age successfully. She has identified six areas where we can improve the way we learn by modeling ourselves after the way kids learn. And you all know, if you are grandparents, you all know that your little ones, your toddlers, your eight-year-olds, they learn amazingly quickly, including other languages, piano, and then all of a sudden, we feel we can't do it. Dr. Wu says, don't you believe it. So, Dr. Wu, tell us, where can we read some more of the things that you're researching? I know you've got very scholarly papers and more accessible papers. What's the website we can go to?
All right, so my research website is CalaLab, C-A-L-L-A, Lab, L-A-B, .com, and it contains both the academic papers and also the non-academic papers, but I'm working on being able to tease apart the two, and, you know, so if people are academics, then they can go to a particular part of the site, and if they're not academics, then they can go to another part of the site. But right now it's all mixed in.
Well, you know what? Some people are on a different level in terms of their desire. We have a lot of experts that listen to our show, a lot of gerontologists. So you may be interested in the more academic papers, and my typical listener, the more accessible ones. Tell us one more time that website.
So it's CalaLab, C-A-L-L-A, like the flower, L-A-B.com.
Terrific. Now, we were piecing together two kinds of intelligences. One is called fluid, which I first ran into in doing research on driving as we get older. Hand-eye coordination, how quickly we can make decisions, and we're supposed to decline there. And as Dr. Wu said, after a certain age, very steeply. And the other is crystallized intelligence, what we've learned in life from experience and from education, which stays not only stays the same, but it can even get enhanced because there are studies showing that older people make better judgments than younger people. But the doctor is saying, hey, these aren't two separate things. One has to do with the other. So are you looking now to do research, Dr. Wu, on how lifelong learning might help us maintain or even increase our fluid intelligence? Is that a possibility?
Right. That's exactly the point. So the idea is that if we engage in these six things that babies and kids engage in, and babies and kids also increase in their fluid intelligence and crystallized, you know, abilities, then maybe you know, this is not an age thing. You know, you can do this at any age and also increase your fluid abilities and your crystallized abilities.
Well, I promise I was going to reveal, you know, I'm not a researcher of this type, so I can make anything up, right? So you got to actually prove stuff. But I could just say anything because I'm on the radio. So I think that one of the main connections is what I'll call the compensation theory. If you have enough experience, you can compensate for the fact that you're slower. And I'll give you a real life. I sit in the front of the car. I'm the passenger. My husband, who has incredible hand-eye coordination, he's very fast, and he drives. Except, you know, the front seat driver, the back seat driver. Why are you going so fast? Why are you missing this turn? Why are you doing this? Because I've got the experience of what happens without the hand-eye coordination. So I think I make better judgments, and he can execute them better. So that's the compensation theory. If you know more, you can make better judgments, even though you can't make them so fast. But I think you're going to really show that there is a connection and yet another reason to continue lifelong learning. So we talked about the fact that there are six elements that you can put into your own life to increase this. One is get help and get reverse mentors and listen to younger folks. That was certainly an important one. The other one is get out of your comfort zone. Learn that instrument even though you believe you can't do it. But there are others that you've identified. So give us another couple that we can put into our own life.
Right. And I just wanted to return to your point about compensation real quick. And so the idea is that if kids and babies just relied on other people or somehow tried to compensate for something by, you know, taking some shortcuts here and there, they may have somebody like a caregiver stop them and say, no, you have to do it yourself, right? And that's something that we don't always get as adults. It ties into the other four things. But so one of the other four things is growth mindset, which is something that you hear a lot about in terms of kids and especially kids in school and adolescents. And the idea is that there's either a growth mindset or a fixed mindset. And so the growth mindset is the belief that you can actually develop and do anything you want to do with enough effort and time, you know. And a fixed mindset is tied to you have the genes for something like, you know, you have the artistic gene or the musical ear or something like that. And if you don't have that, there's no way you can get better at it. So essentially you either don't need to practice, or you already have the abilities, you know, things like that.
So this is something that could hold us back a lot if we have that fixed mindset.
Exactly. And so the idea is that when you're an adult and you're learning something, typically people say, oh, you can't do that because you're not good at it. As a kid, you never really hear that. You just hear, you know, let's just see how good you are, right, or how good you could get. And once you do get good at something, and so this happened to me a lot, actually, as I was learning stuff as an adult. Once you get good at something, people say, oh, you've got the artistic gene, or you're only good at it because your mother can do it, you know, things like that. And these are comments that I've heard both for myself, but also from the other students who are in the classes that I'm in.
Yeah, we tend to impose on ourselves what's called strong suits and weak suits. And it's very early in life. Somebody's told us that we're fat, and we think we're fat no matter what our weight is. We impose who we are so instantly, and we carry it. And one of the things that we have culturally imposed on us for almost everyone listening, maybe everyone in the world, is getting older is no good, and there's something negative that's going to happen, and you can't do it. Huge, huge can'ts. And that's something that we bring in our own heart. It's not, we've really internalized this. And if we can have that growth mentality that you're talking about, Dr. Wu, and not that fixed, this is who we are and we can never change. And I have to tell you, I feel it personally. I have to take a very big test for securities licensing, which I've had taken before.
You may think that I'm full
scared.
Of it.
Only because I'm 10 years older than I was before. So even I could buy into this nonsense. We could bet. Get out of this. Be butterfly. Don't you know
for my age. Da, 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 da.
Okay. So what we want to do in the next segment is finish the big six and then kind of reprise them so that people can think of ways that they can really put it into their life. Is that okay?
Sure. Sounds great.
Great. Okay, Stu, we are ready. Yes.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, and we are debunking some of the myths about aging, one of them being we can't learn, that we are in a fixed position after a certain age, and we have to accept decline. Well, the answer is we really don't. But the things we have to do, while they may seem simple, they're not easy. And Dr. Wu is with us today. She's a psychologist. She has been looking at the play of infants and children and how successful that play is to lifelong learning and why we can't model some of those things. So I'll give you a quick recap, then I want to give you the over to Dr. Wu for the final three. There are six things she's identified. One, of course, is get help. Kids get help all the time. Take help. Take classes. Accept the largesse of younger folks. Second of all, that I think is critical, get out of your comfort zone. Only you can take you out of your comfort zone. Nobody else can say that, yes, you could learn to be a drummer, or yes, you could learn to knit even if your hand-eye coordination has been terrible. Or you can exercise even though you've been a couch potato. Get out of that comfort zone. Don't compensate. I had the compensation theory. If you're smart, you can take care of other things that you don't do very well. Dr. Wu says, no, do it all. Make sure that it happens. And have a growth mentality. Don't put labels on yourself and say, well, I can't do it because my mother couldn't or I don't have the genetics. We even know that longevity, the genetics of longevity is declining. It's not as important anymore what our genes are. It's how we think about our successful aging, how we eat and exercise in our lifestyle. So those are three of the things. We could all do that. Dr. Wu, though, there are another three things which you haven't even introduced to us, so let's hear about that. Things that we can do to increase our cognition and our lifelong learning ability.
Right, so the fourth thing is a forgiving environment. So the growth mindset part of it is, you know, what comes from you, what are your beliefs, right? But the forgiving environment is about when you're surrounded by people who believe things like old dogs can't learn new tricks and believe that if you make mistakes, you're a loser, you know, things like that, then that doesn't help you. So no matter how much you believe something, if you're surrounded by people who don't help you get there, that's you know, going to be a detriment. And,
and
so the idea
friend.
That, yeah,
I call
and,
it the toxic
and,
friend.
Exactly right. And if you have people who allow you to make mistakes, allow you to fall and fail and still get up and, you know, continue being who you are because their mistakes don't define you, then that is really critical. And if you think about how often do we allow babies and kids to make mistakes? Very, very often, right? How often do we allow adults to make mistakes? And it's not very often.
Yeah, you know, geniuses make a lot of mistakes. And there's a lot of studies on how often geniuses make mistakes. One of the great lines was Thomas Edison, who he tried to make the light bulb work 6,000 times. And he said, I didn't fail 6,000 times. I just found out the wrong way to do things 6,000 times, which led me to the right way. And I will say, although this is not the show for it, that kids who are not allowed to fail, who do get criticized for failure, do end up with a lot of psychological issues and a lot of inability. So I hope what you're saying is right, Dr. Wu, that most kids are allowed to fail. I know many who are not, and it's psychologically very damaging. But as an adult, you're doing that to yourself. You're allowing other people to do it to yourself. Don't do it. So that's number four. What else do we have on the list?
Right, yeah. So just to quickly touch on what you just said, it's actually the whole point of this theory is that it's not an age issue. It's, you know, babies are aging too if they don't engage in these six things, right? Kids who maybe are prodigies and aren't allowed to make a lot of mistakes, right, for example, they might be aging prematurely. So more of a kind of lifespan issue, plus being, you know, at, something that, you know, we can take with older adults. But, yeah, so the fifth thing is having a really serious commitment to learning. And so this refers to when you think about what babies and kids have to learn and why they're learning it, they're learning things for survival. They're not really learning things as a hobby that they can just kind of drop after a couple months, you know, because it gets too hard or too there's, you know, not enough time or something like that. And so if you learn for survival because of your job or because, you know, your spouse, you know, speaks another language and you're trying to learn that language or whatever, those types of learning seem to decrease over time as we age.
Yeah, because it's voluntary. As you say, it's not a survival in our minds, but engagement in life actually is a survival issue. I don't have the research. I've read a lot of research. Life purpose and life engagement is the language of gerontologists. And they will tell you that you'll die sooner. Very simple. Doctors, heart cardiologists have been on the show saying one of the most important things in surviving a very difficult operation is that you have a calendar and you have something to do. And they have told me, Dr. Wu, that patients who say, hey, doc, I got to get out of here by next Thursday because I'm in a band, they know right away that guy's got a better chance of surviving his heart valve operation than somebody who is listless and doesn't have engagement in life. And it's the same thing with lifelong learning. You're making up the fact that you need to do this. Kids need to do it. We have to make it up, and we have to find a purpose. And there's plenty of purposes out there, people who need us. So I get that, and it isn't so easy, Dr. Wu. It isn't so easy in an ageist society. But let's continue on with our list of things that we can do, because this hits such a core.
Right, so the sixth thing, the last thing, is even if you're doing all of that, right, as an older adult, typically, even as a young adult, but typically if you're doing all of that, you're maybe learning one thing really, really well, like you're learning how to paint and you're spending as much time as you can getting teachers and things like that. But think about how much an infant or kid actually has to learn. A baby is learning how to speak, how to walk, how to eat, who, you know, their social partners are, things like that. School, they have to learn 5 subjects a day, you know. So learning multiple skills simultaneously is the last one. So try to have these skills kind of bridge across different domains like language, motor, vision, you know, social skills, things like that. And so if you learn a lot of things at the same time, and you're engaging in all the other 5 factors, then for me, it seems intuitive that you wouldn't decline as much, right? You would be, you know, building your fluid and crystallized ability. But I still need to show this in scientific studies.
that's exactly the point now, of course. You know, unfortunately, when it comes to the science, we'll say the science, people want proof. They want to say, well, if somebody did these 6 things, then their crystallized intelligence on tests that are, you know, with blind studies and so on, is going to show that they have less of a decline. Or you're less likely to have Alzheimer's. There's always the nuns studies and the people who have less stress in their life. They're always looking at what's going to happen with dementia. But the truth is, when you listen to Dr. Wu, everybody listening knows that if they did these things, it would work. You don't need a lot of studies. It's not a pill that you have to take that could be dangerous. You just have to focus on a few new things that you really don't think are in your wheelhouse. Get help. Have a growth attitude. Get rid of the negative people who are all around you. And I'm going to give you one little thing, Dr. Wu, and it was really amazing. I was in a cruise for a couple of weeks, and I was actually working. And in this cruise, there was a fellow who was totally blind. And at the end of the evening, like most cruises, they were dancing. Who do you think got up and danced? He did. And I said my favorite line, well, everybody who says it can't be done. Get out of the way of the people who are doing it. We do tend to have friends and even sometimes spouses who are very negative about doing new things. You can't, you can't, you can't. And that is the biggest issue with regard to successful aging. Now, in terms of this, on the science side, though, I mean, you've been writing papers on this. You've been winning awards with these, with your different theories. How are we going to get the word out to the gerontologists and the scientific community on this? Are they receptive?
Right. So they intuitively, you know, they think it makes sense, right? But they, you know, as scientists, we always need data to back it up. And so there are two ways that we're going about it. One is finding people who are actually doing this, you know, day to day, engaging in these
right.
six factors, because there are people who do that, and then seeing how good they actually look compared to people who aren't. And so we've created this questionnaire to basically assess how much are you actually engaging in these six things. And so we're currently running a study looking at, how do they look, you know? So, for example, my painting teacher. Sorry?
Before we go to the example, we're going to go into a little bit of a break. We're going to come back. And I'm going to volunteer. Maybe it's close. But I'm going to try. How about you guys? We'll be right back.
And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay, now when they put in commercials. So, is this study still open for people who might want to be?
If they're in the Riverside area, yeah, or like, you know, Inland Empire.
Say that again.
If they're in the Southern California, you know, Inland Empire area, and they want to drive in, because it has to be done in the lab. So,
what is this Empire? I'm not familiar.
It's basically East of LA there's this area called the Inland Empire. It's just a Southern California term, but basically anybody in Southern California, you know, within driving distance to the lab, we'd have to get people into the lab to, you know, do the cognitive studies and things like that.
Okay. I mean, I obviously I'm out, but I do have a place in Palm Springs. Is Palm
right,
Springs
right.
in this empire?
Yeah, it's part of that Inland Empire, yeah.
I didn't know that. You know, I live in an empire. I didn't even know it.
Yeah. It's only about an hour and a half or something from Riverside, so yeah. But you know,
yeah.
The second phase of this whole thing, we're gonna open it up to people who, you know, are nationwide, right? So you can phone in to do these cognitive studies and things like that. But we're not at that stage yet. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And before we go back on, because this is gonna be our last segment, it's really running away. Who's funding this? I'm not going to ask this on the air. I'm just asking you.
Right. So far, I'm basically getting funded from the university. So we have startup funds. When you start as a faculty member, so I just started a couple years ago, and I've been applying to NSF and NIH for money. But you know, with budget cuts and things like that, it's very, very difficult, especially as a new person, because they're funding existing studies already, right? So it's hard to show that this is something that's, you know, better than, you know, what's out there. And so we're hoping that the budget cuts aren't as severe as they tell us, but, you know, so.
Okay, so
yeah.
Is this the University of Southern California? Is it SoCal?
SoCal, yeah, so it's my second year in SoCal, yeah.
Okay, great, great. All right, so I'm going to, I won't be asking those, you know, things, but...
Right.
But I will ask about the study, and you will say mm-hmm. that it's, you know, local, just like you said, and that you're planning to open up in phase two, right? And then
yeah.
I want to talk about the applied
right.
potential for this. See, I see
right.
it for the activities directors in different areas of, like, assisted livings, independent living, over 55 communities. I see it as important to the activities directors, to the professionals. But how do you see it applied?
Yeah, so we're actually, so phase three of it that we're planning to roll out in the next few years is basically an intervention with older adults who don't engage in these six things, get them to engage in these six things, and then see how they do. Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, so we are ready.
may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I can't wait to be inappropriate for my age. I'm not inappropriate enough for my age, but I'm working on it, and I hope you are too. And here we are with Dr. Rachel Wu, who says we can learn. We can learn out of our comfort zone. We can increase both our crystallized and fluid intelligence, and she's working on proving that. We need help. We should be getting it. We need people who are positive around us. We need an inner spirit of growth, not a fixed idea of who we are. And we can not only age successfully, but feel younger and make more contribution to the world if we do. Now, in order to prove this, there's a study going on, and it's kind of local. I volunteered, but I can't go because it's too far away. However, there's something great on the horizon. So tell us, Dr. Wu, how the study is going now, who could engage in it, because people may be listening and that would be interested, and what are you seeing for the future?
So right now we've got a local thing going on where people come into our lab at UC Riverside, University of California, Riverside, and a lot of things are done in the lab now. But the second phase of it, we're hoping to be able to roll out something where you can do things over the phone, so you can just call in, you know, anywhere you are, nationwide or maybe even internationally, to be able to do the cognitive studies and things like that over the phone. So they actually have a lot of studies that have done this before in the past. And it's been pretty successful, so we're hoping that that would be the case. And then the third part of it would be, you know, having an intervention where if you're not engaging in these six things, to help you engage in these six things and see how much better you do over, you know, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 5 years even.
Yeah. You see, what my concern is, today they call it the old. I hope one day there'll be a better name for it. We're, as baby boomers, we call ourselves the generation bold. You know, in our 60s, we're kind of like middle-aged. In our 70s, we're doing really great. Where the problem comes in is mid-80s, because there we lose engagement. The engagement begins to dwindle. And this is even true of very educated folks, and sometimes even more so, because they get depressed because they don't have a place in our society, and they had a big place. It doesn't have to do with money. It has to do with what you're talking about, this life engagement structure. And after that depression, when we don't think we have a place in the world, decline comes very, very quickly, physical and cognitive decline, and that's the end of the day. The people who have gotten past that and are really vibrant in their early 90s are going to add another decade to their life, and with new medicine, maybe even more. So, but a worthwhile decade. Not just that they're hanging in there. And this is why these interventions are so important. If you can find the folks that aren't doing it, or their family members that are worried about them, and you can create these interventions where they do get themselves out of their comfort zone, you know what they used to call it? A new lease on life. It's like having a new lease on life. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm very fascinated. How is this being received? Are people looking at this as like a minor kind of study? Because I think it's a very big deal.
Yeah, I mean, to me it's a big deal. And I'm trying to spread the word about it so that, you know, we can increase kind of visibility of it. But some people, you know, they think they're already doing it, right? And so I would tell those people, well, okay, so maybe you think you're stretching yourself to the limit, but maybe there's even more you can go. You know, more in a particular direction, like you might be able to get more outside of your comfort zone, right? So I might get asked, I play the piano, I'm just learning a new piano piece every day. That's enough, right? And I would say, well, you know how to play the trumpet? Like, why not go learn how to play the trumpet? You know, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, when you listed the six, which included being positive and included being out of your comfort zone, the third one was getting help. That was actually your top two, was getting out of the comfort zone, getting help. That's my problem. I could see right away that of the six things you mentioned, getting help is my, I try to do it on my own. There's no question about it. I do those other things. My attitude is good, but I never get help. That's bad. And I could see that now. I see it for the first time, so I'm very grateful for you for bringing this up. Now, I see another area here, and I'm wondering if you've been thinking about it. Because we work with environments for aging, we work with a lot of activities directors. And there's actually a National Association of Activities Directors. These are the folks that make the activities for nursing homes, for assisted livings, and I get nauseous. I get physically ill. Going to assisted livings, walking in, there's a lot of people playing bingo. I happen to love bingo. I go to bingo. But that's not what we're talking about. I get sick when I see people just sitting and playing just solitaire. That's all they're doing online. It's wrong. And there's a lot of money being spent on having a good life in these places. And I'm wondering if you're able to reach the activities directors and the operators of these assisted livings and independent livings and over 55 communities to infuse your six-point program. I hope that we can do that and even help you do that. I mean, is that on the radar at all?
Yeah, it would be. So once we prove or, you know, have enough data to better understand what's going on with these six things, then we can actually go to people and say, look, it seems to work really, really well, at least in the lab setting. Let's roll it out in the kind of community setting. And so it would be something that we would love to collaborate with, activity directors and things like that, to really understand if this would work at a larger scale.
Yeah, and I think that it will, and I'll tell you why. Remember you talked about not having people who are negative and people who let you fail and were kind of supportive? I think I think one person inoculates another in a good way. That one person who's doing it, then a lot of people start to do it. It's much, much easier, I think, honestly, to do it in a community setting than it is in your own individual home. When you have to be totally self-motivated and you have to do it on your own and create your own structure for learning and find your own courses and drive to them and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah, and one thing that these six things might help out with is, you know, you can decide for yourself, are you somebody who wants to engage in these six things but haven't yet, or are you just somebody who doesn't want to and wants to stay on the couch, essentially, right? And if you... You know, like, I'm not somebody to say you have to do either one, but you just kind of want to know who you are. If you do want to engage in these six things, then you should tell
freedom
if you're living in a nursing home. Exactly. If you're living in a nursing home.
I'm going to thank you so much, and more than ever, this line is appropriate. Get out there, kids, and make it happen. Okay. Very good.
Great.
Time flies by. I mean,
yeah.
You thought that half an hour was long, and an hour was short. Am I right?
Right. It was great, yeah.
Oh, it was wonderful. Thank you so much for your work, and please keep in touch. I am doing a paper on play, and I think there's a lot that we can maybe learn or share or whatever. And I get to L.A. Yeah, my kids live in L.A.
Oh, great.
So I do get to L.A. fairly frequently, not as much as I would like. And eventually my plan is to be living in Palm Springs.
Oh, cool.
So that'd be wonderful. I want to stay in touch. Okay?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
now, you know you'll be on the front page of our website by Wednesday coming up.
Okay.
You know that this will be archived, and you can use it for any purpose that you would like. All right?
Wonderful. Yeah, thanks
great.
So much.
Take care.
Great,
bye,
thanks.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You.
I always like one guest shows.